Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chesler.
This guy.
On today's episode, we'll be constantly hearing Brad go, woo, over and over again, because we're talking about Space Wolves.
L and V, no need for them, my friend. W-O-O-F.
Oh, that's what you meant by that, L and V. I'm like, when is this? Sure. I don't hate Space Wolves. I'm just not as excited as Brad is about them.
I'm very excited.
Yeah, this is one of this. It's Brad's favorite faction to break. All right, so those who are new to the 40K Lorecast, this is a weekly cast focused on the lore of Warhammer 40K, releasing every Monday at around 7 p.m. Eastern time. I say around because that's when we push it out to everybody. When your app updates, I don't know. On that note, for those of you who've been listening for a while or new to listening, if you could leave a comment on the cast, telling us that you like it or that you don't like it, I have to read them either way, and give us a like. It does help us. It pushes out to more people and really improves
our metrics. And it weirdly a lot, by the way. It's a real thing.
It's not weirdly a lot. Of course, it's a lot.
Comments helps.
I see. It's weird how much it helps. I think weirdly that people commenting was good.
A very small amount of comments helps hugely.
That's true. Also, we always push our totally free Discord in this cast. We built a Discord. For those who don't know what Discord is, Google it. Lord knows I should be the one explaining it. But we have a totally free Discord for all of you, for any fans of the 40K universe. It's made for people to talk about the cast, 40K lore, hobbying, memes, anything. As we've been saying the last few casts, big shout out to Kevin, Ethan, Maisie, Trevor, Ryan, David, and Brian. Those are our mods. They're really helping keeping it going. I'm sure some people don't like the fact there's mods, but see 4chan, and that's why we have mods. So
please don't see 4chan.
Yeah, exactly. Fair enough. Understand what 4chan was and go, oh, yeah, mods. Mods are good. So if you're looking for a place to interact, please follow the link in the show notes to it and join. Lastly, though, we also have Brad. Brad is a coach of...
Why did you have to make it sound so sad? Lastly, we have Brad.
Yeah. It's true.
The Price is Right noise fucking sounds.
Fair. Fine. Luckily...
And
to all of our great joy, we have Brad's coaching services. You can go to our website, the40klorecast.com. Again, link is in the show notes. You can see Brad's page for coaching services. With close to 30 years of playing the game and 10 years plus of coaching, Brad really is a solid resource. And his coaching, just for people who don't know what the coaching is, it's focused primarily on helping you understand the game better to kind of improve not just your gameplay, but the game experience you have on the tabletop.
Trying to make it more fun. I want you to win more, but I want you to have more fun first.
Yep. So if you want to reach him, you can go to our website. You can go to our Discord. They're both available. But Brad didn't make a website for a long time, and so forever he was shouting his name into this podcast, which wasn't a problem until the podcast got popular. And now every spam bot on earth knows what your email is. So Brad, it's too late now.
We didn't do it for a while, and we brought it back.
We got rid of it. Everyone's like, well, this has to come back. So I enjoy. let's feed the spam bots.
Old Man Brad, 40K at gmail.com. I welcome you, spam, to my folders. Doesn't matter.
There's lots of single ladies in your area. You have an Amazon package that needs to be delivered. Probably.
Oh, there's so many that talk about the cast, the metrics they have for us, and all the deals we're going to have.
Deals. That's great. We have some great deals in the cast.
A lot of things going on.
All right. So let's get this going. The Space Wolves. Just give you a quick kind of background, then we'll dive more into them. The Space Wolves are the 6th Legion of the Space Marines. They were actually like everybody else, they were founded all the same time. All 20 legions were founded at the exact same time, but each legion was a little bit different and was used for different things. The Space Wolves were primarily known during the Great Crusade for their ferocity and their battle style, and that has not changed.
They found something they liked and they stuck with it.
Yeah. From a lore perspective, the Space Wolves are interesting because they're different from other legions. And I give GW credit. They really went out of their way to create a faction that's quite different from the others within the Space Wolves. Maybe not every edition felt this way, but the Space Wolves really do get some very unique rules that play very well into them. I'm going to admit, I don't think the 10th edition rules are that good.
Historically, they've had a lot of really good flavor because the Space Wolves are character-driven, personality-driven.
Yep.
They have bands. They come out. It's just so nice because they have different ways of fighting based on who's with them.
Yeah, and that's where on the tabletop they've been really unique and different. So when you would play, either when you play Space Wolves, you play against Space Wolves. It wasn't like you're playing against Space Marines until 10th edition.
Well, the company's made a big difference in how you do things.
It really was a better thing. But from a lore perspective, and Brad hit on this a second ago, but I want to dive a bit more into it. What makes them really enjoyable is that they're very heavily character driven, more so than anyone else, I think, in the game. Maybe Chaos, some of the Chaos factions.
And not even as much as it used to be.
Yeah. I mean, it really is. They are, we're actually going to do our second cast. This is just going to be on the stories of the heroes of the Space Wolves. And this is because the Space Wolves themselves are obsessed with creating sagas for themselves.
I mean, they show up literally telling. They have, as old Norse skalds.
Yeah.
They have telling the stories of yore. They have huge banners that are straight up previous victories. All the times that we beat the shit out of somebody.
Those victories are like 60% Pyrrhic, by the way. It's constantly like, did everyone die? But I won.
Doesn't matter. Exactly. You just got to have one guy limp back and go 100% victory.
Yeah, exactly. And they also, the cool thing about them is like the Dark Angels and the Blood Angels, the Space Wolves have a lot of their own units to help make this more unique. Troops, planes, objective. Actually, I remember they found a dumber way to make cavalry. That is actually a true thing. I will say, like, because if any of you thought I was going to say, horses are stupid, but riding a wolf is smart. No. In fact, one of their main guys is on a Santa sled being pulled by two wolves, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
Two wolves.
Which is just like...
By the way, Thunder Wolves, thank you very much. Not just regular wolves. Yes.
Fire Prism make Ben-Hur go... That's what that would be like. Oh, he's coming right at us with those wolves running at wolf speed. I have a hover tank with a...
It's a spaceship.
With a Fire Prism on it. If I, were the
I like that you called it a hover tank. You're like, it could just fly away.
It also can go to space, but it's not going to because I'm not really in a rush. I'm being chased by two wolves pulling a sleigh.
You're about to get beat up by
if,
Logan if and Slay.
Yeah, if it gets there, but before it gets there, fire.
Four up in Vong. Ting.
Prism cannon.
Nah, doesn't ignore it like it did in ninth.
Ninth edition, it would have just like, and he doesn't exist anymore. Like, which is how it should have been. All right, back to the good thing. Space Wolves also are a completely in-your-face combat army. And if you can't tell from Brad and I, we prefer melee armies. I think it's
better for the... Epic stories.
Well, I'm just taking tabletop-wise. It's a better experience for everybody. People don't like losing to stupid Tau who hide behind crap and shoot at you.
Well, the biggest thing is that even if you're getting smashed in 40K in melee... You're still inflicting casualties. You're involved in the game. You're not just picking up your models and setting them back on your tray.
Tau. We did Big the fan. Cast. I can go back to it. So the Space Wolf lore, as a result of this, is this exhilarating, violent, like really kind of fast-paced action adventure.
Well, it's tons of great combat stories of epic heroes.
Yeah.
Are epic heroes for a reason. They get Beowulf-style poems about them because they do badass shit.
The last piece I want to jump on, though, and I haven't done this before, but I really need to, is maybe the best part of Space Wolves is their fan base. I've been playing this game for a while now, you a lot longer. I'm going to say it honestly. I've never had a bad game playing against Space Wolves. I think that I really do believe their player base is one of the best in the game. They love their army. They tend to do really good. I've seen some of the best paint jobs I've seen have actually been Space Wolves.
Some of the best conversions. Some of the boards.
Some of the display boards. Ooh. So I'm going to call out the Space Wolf players and just say, so far, you guys, my experience, you guys are doing really great. And it really is something that you should take pride in, because I think the Space Wolf community is a very, very good community. And when Brad steps into it every now and then and ruins an entire edition for you, just want to remind you, don't be so nice to him. Now, one last little bit on Space Wolves before we go into. They're actually one of the earliest retcons in the game, and we're going to cover this. They were originally written as a First Legion, like stoic loyalty to the Emperor, and then they just decided later on to make them like a violent hand of retribution. However, GW did this retcon in a very unique way. Usually when GW does a retcon, they do the whole, I don't know what you guys are talking about.
It's always this way.
I never wrote the thing. GW actually admits they did this, and they created a story arc over the last maybe 10, 15 years to explain the difference. And some of the stuff that happened with Lehman Russ, some of the stuff with Bjorn, Ragnar and what has it. And they've used that to kind of turn the Legion from what they originally wrote it was to what it is today.
They originally wrote it at was kind of meh.
Yeah, that's why. Because originally it was just another Legion. But yeah, I just want to call it out because they do get retconned, but it is in my mind the best done retcon in the game. All right, so let's dive into kind of ancient Space Wolf history, which is the formation of the Sixth Legion. Before we do that, I actually realized we didn't do a good job of something before. So
We touched on it,
but the first founding of the
Legion. Maybe we didn't do a good job, but
we've mentioned it.
We glazed over it.
Really. Yeah. So let's start with the actual founding. We didn't do it before, so we'll do it right now. So all 20 legions started at about 100,000 strong. And all 100,000 of these 20 legions were all pulled from Terra. The Emperor, you know, they did the gene seeding of implanting the organs at 60% work.
God damn it.
It's just true. He did all that stuff, but he did it with the Primarch's genetic code. Because even though Chaos whisked them all away, he still had the genes of them.
Well, also, let's talk about the fact that every Legion originally started out without its Primarch and saw battle, and a lot of battle.
Right.
Before.
Well before.
Yeah, it's not like these guys are bright-eyed and bushy-tailed and slap a Primarch on. No, these guys have been in multiple wars.
Oh, there were some guys, I must say, probably centuries for a couple of them.
Yeah, before they found depending a on which Primarch yeah, you're talking about. Primarch.
Yeah. Alpharius is a question mark.
Yeah, he's there the whole time. Whatever.
So the Legions, though, what I want to touch on here from the Legions is that the Emperor also planned out who to put in each of the Legions. Because the Emperor seemed to somehow know, obviously knew, who the Primarchs were and built the Legions to match those Primarchs. And what I mean by that is that he built the Legions based on who he recruited into them.
In the style of fights that he put them in.
Yeah.
The Emperor actually assigns a lot of these Legions to fight in a certain style of combat, but it's a certain style of combat because of the engagement that he put them in.
But and the thing is that he knows the genetic code that's going into them is going to lean them a certain way. So the example is the Imperial Fists. Actually, a few of these. The Imperial Fists all came from industrial sections of Terra. So these are all people who are being uplifted. They all had a deep understanding and like love for the construction, which makes perfect sense for Imperial Fists. The Salamanders came from the volcanic regions of Terra, which I assume, the Ring of Fire, I don't know what that meant, by the way. I read it and I was like, that makes zero sense.
It also has nothing to do with Nocturne, but go ahead.
I know, but it's just funny if they were like, oh yeah, this all the Salamanders were pulled from the volcanic regions of Earth. And I'm like, it's actually pretty well spread out, man. It's not like the Ring of Fire is gigantic. It's the entire plate, but whatever. The Iron Hands actually came from the Wastelands, which I liked because the idea of the Iron Hands is they're supposed to be like the Mad Max of Terra. This way they would embrace technology so they could survive.
Well, they basically were the guys that could MacGyver anything.
Yeah. The Space Wolves, though, were unique. They weren't pulled from a region, but from all over, except they were kind of,
except for
horrible.
When you pulled their HR file, it said crazy mofo. And they're like, putting them in the wolves.
Yes. They were all barbarians. They were largely violent. Again, this is one of the things I laugh at. The emperor conquers Terra. And then at the end of it, he's pulling people from barbaric regions of Terra. So apparently he did kind of a shit job.
No, because let's just go where it is. Emperor's a dick. He left certain places semi in conflict so he could have warriors that were proven by fire to jump into these legions.
Anyway, so that's where the Space Wolves were pulled from. This is a little bit different, though, than like the Night Lords and Raven Guard, who were actually taken from criminals and assassins. These were more just roving war bands that he was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to make you guys Space Marines.
It was people that were really, headstrong.
Yeah. Although what's odd about it is that when I read that, my thought would be, okay, so this Legion is going to be a problem Legion. No, from the go, the Space Wolf Legion was the most loyal.
Hardcore.
Yeah, I mean, like it different. Because we talk about the first Legion with who became the Dark Angels being loyal. It's different. The Space Wolves were just, you give them a subtle hint of what you want them to do, and they're gone.
And they yellow swagged it. And they didn't ask questions, didn't want to know stuff. They wanted, from the get-go, though, they wanted to be glorious warriors fighting for the most glorious of leaders, which was the Emperor.
Yeah. So the Sixth Legion, kind of like the First Legion before the Lion came into play, just whatever the Emperor wanted, they would do. What I find interesting about the two of them is the Sixth Legion and the First Legion have a lot in common. The First Legion, as we covered it in the Dark Angels cast, the First Legion was really good at eliminating things the Emperor didn't want anyone to know about. Them and the Custodes would be sent all over the galaxy.
All the way down. This is a bigger thing on this because the Space Wolves were known as the Emperor's assassins.
Yeah, but publicly.
But also, they weren't going door to door, grinding out, killing people in the basement. They went in and won a glorious war, and that's it.
Yeah,
it still was glorious.
You might be right. I took it a little bit differently. What I took it as is that the First Legion fought wars and battles that no one knew were being fought or waged. No one knew what the first Legion did. That's why they would show up like skulls on them. That's why they were all so weird, right? Yeah. The Sixth Legion would do equally violent and horrible stuff, but there's a camera crew behind them.
Correct. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. They're the righteous wrath of the Emperor. You're not doing something where you have to start questioning yourself because you're told the whole time you're doing the right thing, man. And the public goes, Way to go.
You rock it. So it's
way to massacre everybody.
Yeah, I think a better example, now that you're saying it to me, is making sense. They were the poster child for why you agree with the Imperium. It's why you don't disagree with the Imperium.
And you're like, hey, man, you can have your own opinion, but a Space Wolf might show up to tell you about it.
Yeah. Well, and that's what happened. I mean, Delsphan was a system who survived the Dark Ages pretty well. They were well equipped. And after numerous attempts the Emperor to get them to pacify, the Emperor just told the Sixth Legion, full assault, launched the entire thing into it. And they did. They went through and conquered the planet like in like a day and a half, mostly because the opposition was just poorly armed Imperial Guard up against 100,000 Space Wolves.
Yeah, they could have punched them to death.
Yeah. The only problem is that the Space Wolves at this moment didn't just take victory, like, oh, we defeated the military. What happened next was just a wholesale slaughter of the population till the streets literally ran with blood because they decided to kill every single person on Delsphan.
Well, they were told to get rid of the opposition.
Yeah.
Objective achieved. Thank you very much.
They did the exact same thing like less than a year later at Malorian. Again, this was a planet that actually went. This one was worse for the people there because they were in rebellion against the Emperor. They had joined Imperial compliance, which the Space Wolves were not cool with. So they went there and, again, slaughtered almost the entire population. door to door.
No, but they're not doing this to scare people, to be, they don't love combat for combat's sake.
Yeah, they're not Night Lords. They're not world eaters.
Yeah. They're not doing this just because they want to be awful. They were told to do something and they're good at doing something. They're not tech turn and nothing like the Dark Angels about it. But yeah.
Yeah, and a lot of it is because they had their loyal. The thing about the early Space Wolves, and I say early, this will continue through into the Horus Heresy, they're insanely loyal to the Imperium.
Well, I was gonna say, you give this, but the Imperium at the time, especially at the time, if you said something bad about the Imperium or did something more appropriately about the Imperium, you were doing something bad to the Emperor.
Which is fair.
That is exactly how it flows.
And you're dead right. And so that's why they took that affront to the Emperor very personal.
Well, and this continues for forever. Even after they get Leman, anytime there's an affront to the Emperor, and that could be anything from a rebellion. Mm-hmm. Man, we'll talk about cowardice in a minute, but like if you do something, they always, the wolves always take it too far.
They do.
But I'm just saying.
Actually, speaking of taking it too far, let's laugh at this one a little bit. So the Space Wolves during the Great Crusade were effectively the commissars of the of everything.
This is true.
So we laugh about this one. Brennan, we laugh about this one. So the Space Wolves gained a reputation for executing Imperial Army officers and soldiers for showing cowardice. Where they'd be, because remember, at this stage, they would all engage together. The Space Marines would land, and the Imperial Army, because that's what it was, the Navy and the Army were all.
Because the Legion wasn't just the Marines.
Yeah, they would all land together. And if in a fight, the Space Wolves detected or saw someone not being as brave as they wanted to be, they would hit him with a bolter to the head.
Oh, instantly.
Yeah.
Oh, you gotta also remember, Space was a freaking crazy, bro. Crazy.
So,
like, we'll go into this a lot. There's a lot of the Marine chapters that don't like working with the wolves because the wolves don't pay attention to any battle plans.
Yeah,
and they YOLO swag it.
And I laugh at this era. If you were an Imperial Army, you did not want to be assigned with the Space Wolves because it was dangerous.
Yeah, because they want personal glory. They're like, we could do this and take no casualties. And it'll go perfect. You're like, yeah, but no one's going to sing any songs about me. That sounds stupid.
Yeah, you know who's not good at Khao Yan or Mok Ka?
More like Booyah.
Yeah.
Write that one down.
Jesus.
Woo!
But
let's go to Fenris.
Let's go to Fenris, and let's talk about Leman Russ. So this will be fun. So Leman, like every other Primarch, was teleported to a random world. Fenris is where he landed. Fenris is the worst written thing of all the dumb planets that GW has written. This one's actually the dumbest. But I'm going to do it because we're doing this.
Yeah. I'm going to let you talk about this because I'm going to YOLO on it afterwards.
Because you're going to be happy about it. It's the dumbest thing. It is like when you read it, it's awesome. And then you take a step back and go, wait, what? So Fenris is a planet that's on it that orbits its sun in an oval pattern. So they call it an ellipsis.
Wild slingshot.
An ellipsis. I actually don't know how this stuff works, but it's something we do have people who do. We have astrophysicists in our Discord. Tell me if that's even possible. I don't know. But anyway, as a result of this, and I'm just saying what GW wrote, I'm saying I agree with it. Fenris has this very long and brutal planet-wide winter as the planet spends most of its time far away from the sun and then loops back around it. And so their year, which is about they wrote 3 to 4 Terran years. The one thing I do know about orbital patterns is that they're very consistent, but apparently not this one. This one, some years the loop is takes 3 years. Some years the loop takes 4 years. That's not how this works.
You're going to get shut down on this one. I can't wait. Continue.
I'll take it. But anyway, but let's have fun with the dumbest part. When Fenris gets back close to the sun, this morphs the planet somehow. because the proximity to the sun, first part makes sense. It melts the ice and the snow that covers much of the planet. So massive floods a la Noah. It creates
massive volcanic activity.
Because the core of the planet goes nuts being this close to the sun. And during this time, and it pains me to say this out loud, the land masses of the planet, along with the oceans of the planet, move and change. and certain land masses are destroyed, and new land masses arrive, creating not new islands, but new continents.
Which would kill everybody.
Yes. This planet does in a month what it took the Earth millions of years. The amount of methane that would be released in doing this would completely remove any and all life instantly. Also, the flooding. Also, no and no and also no. But it's okay, because the people who live on Fenris, they're a nomadic people. And so when their entire planet starts to burn and churn, they just pick up the old hobo sack and start wandering across to find new land.
You know what this does create? A bunch of people that beat the shit out of each other.
Okay. What, because they're running across fresh volcanic lava?
Look, man, I'm just saying what it says in the stories.
I know. It's so stupid. It's so stupid. Yeah, they in the stories, sometimes you get lucky and your landmass is untouched, which is good because your landmass is untouched, but it means everyone's going to come attack your landmass.
Then you got to beat the crap out of
yeah.
them.
Yeah, or you do lose yours. You have to go somewhere else. Also, where's the food coming from?
Why you got to worry about such crap, man?
It's
beat
funny.
Up a wolf.
Like, don't get me wrong. Mount Elba makes some very good wine. Like volcanic ash is really good for the soil, but it's not really good for the soil 3 weeks after the lava settled. It takes a minute.
And the best part about this is they come up with, yes, does this make any sense? Absolutely not. However, the lore and the traditions of how they go about things is wildly hardcore.
There is, but hold on, we're not done.
Oh, you're going to go with...
There's one more. We have to talk about Asinine.
We don't know. I was going to skip over this.
Well, yeah, we need it for the fang, so yeah, I have to...
That's true.
Apparently, while on its weird ellipses, every single time it goes past the sun, the north pole of the planet leans away from the sun. And so for this north pole is called Asaheim, A-S-A-H-E-I-M. Anyway, Asaheim is preserved. Despite all the sea levels rising like 1,000%, doesn't affect them. Despite the entire Earth being covered in volcanic ash, doesn't affect the North Pole. So anyway, this one area is spared it, but no one can go live there because this pole is filled with monsters. Because what we forgot to mention earlier is that Fenris, like Caliban, is really close to the Eye of Terror. Not they can see it close, but close.
The pole's full of monsters.
Yeah. Trolls, which don't come up in the story. Ice worms, sound cooler than they are. And then trolls, ice worms, and then deer and bears.
That is true. They put them in the same sentence.
Yeah, it's all the same sentence. I had to look at it twice. Did you just list troll, ice worm, Fenrisian wolves, and then deer?
Same deal. Probably the same amount of...
Well, I'm laughing more because the sentence before it is it's full of monsters and makes it unlivable because there's deer there.
Nope.
I'm in Michigan. Brad's in Ohio. Do deer make your land unlivable?
Not so much.
I mean, it can ruin a garden.
Yeah. I mean, they make it unlivable, but they don't because they just let them exist.
Yeah, that's all my point is. It's like it was a funny writing. I have to call GW out for where they were like, oh, it's an incredibly dangerous hellscape of creatures, of ice worms, trolls, frost giants, Fenrisian wolves, deer. Were there also squirrels we should watch out for? Is there a dangerous hamster invasion?
I mean, the one from Ice Age might be.
That's true. So anyway, the people of Fenris are stuck on this ever-changing, like, rest of the planet. So... Let's tell the story, the worst knockoff of the story of Romulus and Remus I've ever heard.
So we don't have the brothers though. Yeah, just Lehman shows up on Fenru's like a comet.
Yeah. And is found not by the local population, but by a wolf.
Thunder wolf specifically.
Yeah. A thunder wolf.
Who raised him as a cub because he's awesome.
Yeah. And so Lehman thinks he's a wolf. I'm not kidding about this, guys. He thought he was a wolf.
He kind of shows that to people.
Yeah, that's enough me crapping on Lehman. Brad will get mad at me. Now we're getting back to the fun part.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
So this is where the story still makes no sense, but it's actually enjoyable. So fast forward a couple of years. I don't know if this is years like we have.
They actually don't tell this because I don't know if he's like a child at this point in time. Or whether he's
older at this point in time. Yeah. You can tell by the stories he's a little bit older at this.
He's still.
He's big.
Yeah, no, he's big. But all the primates become big quickly.
I think honestly, this is why I laugh at the story so much. I think he lived through multiple cycles of the ice and fire. I think at this point in the story, he's like late teens, early 20s.
They don't really stay because I think he might be like 13 though.
Maybe.
You can remember the Primarchs get super huge.
They
really
do,
fast.
But I mean, it's because of when what happens next is why I said.
Possibly, yeah.
When they kind of folded him in. But anyway, he's out with his mother and brothers, who are a pack of wolves, and a bunch of hunters circle them and kill his mother and his two brothers. And then Lehman kills over a dozen of them with his bare hands.
Yeah, he's just a naked guy.
And the whole time they're shooting him. And this is something that happens with Primarchs a lot. Like, you can shoot a Primarch. It just doesn't bother them. They're Mongo. It's just going to make them more angry.
Yeah, he smokes fest these guys. Yeah. With, by the way, zero combat expertise at this point.
Yeah, he's just using his bare hands and pulling people's arms off them. What I do like about this story, though, is they just shot him so many times that it made him tired. That's what the story refers to, is he just got shot so many times that he began to tire, and the hunters were able to jump on him and tie him up. And they brought him back to see their king. And the king, took one look at Lehman and went, yeah, yeah. This 100%. This is an addition. Yeah. You're with me now.
He'll be on a training program tomorrow.
Yeah, this is, oh my god! Like, if you're a king in a land where it's all nomadic movement, filled with combat, having the warrior who's 4 times the size of anyone else on the planet, and is faster, smarter than, yeah, we're gonna call that a win.
Also, this is the best. As someone that loves me. An 80s montage.
Yeah.
The next couple stories go, Lehman trained and learned the customs, beliefs, and everything, mastered them immediately.
Yeah.
And you're just like, so he was just Rocky IV in Russia?
This is Rocky IV Russia. Lehman is out there. But plus, like with a reading, it's Sylvester Stallone also having a book in between push-ups and wood chopping.
But I'm just like, that's all my thoughts ever go to this on this one, because he instantly becomes awesome.
It was funny, though. Yeah, he's, like, cutting down trees.
Oh,
yeah, 100%. He's doing all this stuff. Some of those stories get a little bit weird. But, you know, what did separate Lehman from other Primarchs, though, at this stage, is his raw power. I will still die on my hill of Rogel Dorn's the best fighter of all the Primarchs. But Lehman's probably the most, like, dumb strength of all of them.
He's dumb strength, but he's fast as shit.
Yeah, I'm saying, of the group, World's Strongest Man competition, it's Lehman.
Yeah, it's Lehman also in the fact that he's in a World's Strongest Man competition, but he also covers some serious distance, because there's like so many stories of him just not suffering no one hits him.
Yeah, because he's so quick, but he's a super athlete, but again, he can be kind of a dumbass.
Yes.
Another one I want to point out too in the story, because I'm going to go back to shitting on it for a second. One story I thought about is that he was known for pulling entire trees out of the ground, which sounds awesome, But this is a planet whose like entire surface recycles every 4 to 5 years.
So he's pulling out these like super tiny little saplings.
It's like, oh yeah, it's like check out like wow, that's incredible.
I mean, pulled a tomato plant out.
He's not really taking out the redwoods, is all I'm getting at. Like, I know when they were writing it what they were getting at, but I'm kind of like, hey, hold on a second. You just told me every tree on this planet is less than 5 years old. I'm just not as impressed. But he was strong. I just wanted to, it just was one of those little gaps in the logic. So eventually the king does die and Leman takes over, obviously. Another funny story on this one. He takes over and all of Fenris is okay with it, but all of Fenris continues to fight with each other.
Yes, they do. The thing is that Space Wolf culture and Fenrisian culture is brought about by personalities. So you still have bands. His stories were so outlandish, effectively, that everybody went, I can't be that level. Yes, he's the great wolf. He's the overlord. But we're still going to do our thing because I still want my stories and I want to be great. But like, come on, like, I can't do that.
That's why it's funny, because like in the stories, it says that, you know, when he ascended the throne, all of Fenris, you know, supported it. But it's so is he ruling them? But they're all still independent. I took it more to be like all the tribes agree not to attack Leman.
I got it more that I got the same ish thing, but I really think it's more that if he decided to say we're all going here, they would all go here.
Okay, I can see that. Okay, so it's more
you can do your thing.
Yeah,
it's like a city states almost.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Where I'm just like
immediately thinking of Monty Python, but just go ahead. Like. Obviously, the next step is the Emperor shows up.
Which, if you don't think this is the funniest Emperor visit, you're just wrong. Yeah. I'm telling you right now, this is the best.
The Emperor shows up. First off, he shows up disguised. He is 15 feet, so 5 meters for those of you who have a proper measurement system, over 2 tons, but he put on a cloak.
No one noticed him.
Yeah, for those who haven't seen Thor Ragnarok, you should see that. You'll get the reference I'm making instantly with that one. And he's this cloaked figure, but he uses his psychic aura, so everyone on the planet's like, this person's important. He ends up eventually in front of Leman, who is the king of the planet, and the Emperor just walks up to him and says, I challenge you.
These are all old Norse god type challenges.
This is so stupid.
It is super awesome, yeah, so and you know it is.
It's not. It's funny is why I like it. I'm with you.
It's hilarious.
It is funny because the Emperor shows up and says to Leman, I challenge you to a contest, a battle of wits, you know, because it's Princess Bride. Anyway, it's just Princess Bride.
It's
Princess Bride. Wow. But the Emperor says that if he wins, he gets to drink the right hand of Leman at his table. And Leman says, fine, if I win, you have to go wander Fenris alone. And the Emperor agrees. And this story is just so dumb. But anyway, the first challenge is an eating competition, which I really wish was spicy food. It would have been a much funnier story. but it wasn't.
The better part is if you found out that the Emperor's never ate anything except bland food.
He doesn't have to. He's just there like, I just do protein bars. I don't know what you guys are doing.
They're just eating spicy Thai.
Yeah. And so the Leman just demolishes the Emperor in eating. And there's a big roar in the hall as everyone celebrates his victory. The next one that Leman does is challenges the Emperor to a drinking competition. And whoever can drink like the largest tanker of mead, I assume, first. And again, Leman wins. Handedly. And he's about to have the offer up his third challenge, at which point the Emperor gets pissed and begins mocking Leman, for lack of a better phrase, saying that, you know, these aren't real competitions, that you're nothing more than a loud boar who eats too much and drinks too much and yells too much. This is, you know, basically saying you have no value. Leman gets obviously kind of pissed off about this and says, fine, and pulls his sword out.
At which point, a duel.
The Emperor stands upright, throws his cloak to the ground.
Don't forget that he throws the cloak off.
And turns out this whole time he's been wearing his golden power armor. No one noticed this, by the way. So when I said earlier, 3 meters, 15 feet, no.
Also,
it's 4 meters.
It's also one of my favorites, is that this is the worst competition ever because the Emperor rocks Leman Russ in the face with a power fist.
Yeah. Leman Russ is holding a sword, gets punched in the face.
He's also wearing a fur.
Yeah.
He's wearing furs.
And gets punched in the face by the most powerful being in the galaxy using his own special weapon for punching things in faces. Anyway, Leman doesn't win this fight.
But he gets up, says, "This was awesome. You're now the boss. Let's do this."
Yeah. And declares instant fealty to the Emperor and goes.
Also, worst fight of all time. You're like, hey, a guy wearing a wolf cloak versus a dude in power armor.
He might have had like a nice like linen shirt on. I could see, you know, something like that. He got wrecked. But for whatever reason, in being wrecked, Leman developed this incredible love of the Emperor outright. And you know, and all of the Primarchs. Well, maybe not all of them because Conrad, but most of the Primarchs had an inherent love of the Emperor. So I do believe this
also is not Angron, but
Angron and Mortarion both had an initial thing. They just felt betrayed by him.
Because Angron was.
Yeah. Whereas I actually don't think Conrad ever liked the Emperor.
He's always crazy.
Yeah. So let's talk about the rise of what I call the rise of the Sixth Legion. So obviously, Leman being added to the Sixth Legion makes things better. And Fenris is like the best recruiting world ever.
Well, also, we have to do that. I know we say it every time we do this. The Primarchs are psychically linked to their legions.
Yeah.
So, it's a when the Primarch shows up for their legion, it is a big deal for the legion.
I also want to bringing something up here that from what happens next is really important, and it's unique in the lore. So the Leman had a ton of warriors with him already, and he wants to bring them with him. They're all way too old to become a space marine, so they have to do the goofy other process
work so much better, but
sort of. But let's get into it. So it works miraculously for these guys. Like within Fenris, like almost none of these guys die in the conversion over. However, one thing I want to point out is when we talk about this in other stories, usually in other stories, the people who are part of what I would call the upconverting more often than not become chaos. Luther, true. You know, Cobaden.
I'll give you that.
The vast majority of the time this happens, those people end up being part of falling to chaos, not with the Space Wolves.
And it's weird because it wasn't Leman's pure presence alone that did this, you know?
Yeah.
Or part of the gene seed itself. So that's a big difference on that.
That's fair. I think it's a combo of both. And we'll talk more about the Canis Helix later. But yeah, it's just kind of a cool thing that these, from the onset, it was obvious the Fenrisians were special. There was something, their stock was just
Leman doesn't take off immediately. This is a cool story, but he waits until he gets some of his people, and then he stones.
Yeah, and it never says it in the lore anywhere, but it's kind of implied to me, and it gets fixed in a bit we'll get to later, where I do think every legion there was animosity between the Primarch and the people on the planet he was on, and the Terrans who were brought there. They don't bring it up with the Space Wolves except for one person, but I do think that most likely was there. That there was a little bit of, this is why I think Leman took his time to leave, where he wanted to bring more of his people with him to really instill his values amongst them all.
Because the Legion 100% falls in line.
Yeah.
Like hardcore with his
99%.
Well, yeah.
The former captain was not.
Yeah, true.
He wasn't a problem, but he was obvious. So let's dive into this though. Once Leman joins the Emperor, they pick up right where they were. The Sixth Legion, before now the Space Wolves, were always fiercely loyal to the Emperor and would do anything to protect him and his reputation. And that continues even more so.
Doubled or more. Mm-hmm. It gets even crazier. Yeah.
Well, you're right, because they were even more violent towards
him. I'm just saying, but also he drops in a drop of a hat, it's go time.
Right. The only problem is that to no surprise, the Emperor exploits this and realizes that he can, I think, so what my opinion is that I think what you saw in a Space Wolves, go from Sixth Legion to Space Wolves with this kind of increased love and do anything for the Emperor, I think that was the Emperor manipulating Lehman.
Oh, 100%.
And Lehman just...
He's the most psychically powerful person in the galaxy, and he's ultra genius.
Yeah. But the Emperor...
And a dick.
Yeah, horrible. And the Emperor needed this, though, because the problem he had was as the Great Crusade was expanding, they were hitting tougher and tougher opposition, and they needed someone who would just go to war in the most violent ways possible with no fear. And this kind of came to a head.
And as much as I love the Wolves, they were not strangers to collateral damage.
No. So they realized at a certain point, the best place to put the Wolves is into head-on conflict, which is not great for your casualty numbers.
They were awesome at it, though. Like, they were right away.
Well, I mean, also in the sense that they would take high casualties.
Kept winning.
And win.
W's, bro. Just win, baby.
It's just a W. This is.
I don't want to hear those silly numbers like casualties. Did you win? Yes, no. I checked the yes box.
Well, let's talk about the Wheel of Fire campaign. There is on the, it's always on the right side of the galaxy because where else would it be?
The right side of the galaxy is a shit show.
It's just awful. It's a bad neighborhood. But the whole issue with the Wheel of Fire campaign is that there's an orc uprising. They don't say if it's a wah or if it's just a bunch of
orcs. What I got from this story, though, it was multiple mini wahs.
Maybe, yeah. But it felt like they were just
fighting all over the place.
Yeah, this was big. And so the Space Wolves got sent out there to put this down. And this was the first major engagement the Space Wolves went into as an entire legion.
This is also when people got to first really understand my boy Lehman, not real big on planning.
Yeah. The issue, this ends up being, it is a success. And all right. So the thing about orcs is you need to just, when an orc invasion is this bad, what you do is you go out there, you don't just like defeat the orcs, you have to eliminate any trace of them.
You get a smoke show.
Yeah, there's nothing left. And the Space Wolves are not really the tactical geniuses of the Space Marines. They're more the like hit thing with sharp thing, even if it means running out of cover and straight into the enemy line while yelling, woo!
I think you meant to say 60% of the time works.
Every time. That seems to be their mantra of battle. It's not. The problem is that they literally did the exact same strategy that the orcs use.
So tactical brilliance. Got it.
And the orcs are bigger, meaner, green, and there's a lot more of them. So this war ends up on the plus side being a benefit.
The Terran-born guys get smoked.
Yeah. The Space Wolves succeed. And eventually do put down the rebellion. But over 90% of the Terran-born Space Wolves are dead, including their former captain, who just, I mean, we were hinting to it earlier. He handed his reins over to Lehman, you know, with no objection. Yeah. But it was very obvious he wasn't happy about it. So anyway, problem solved, because all the Fenrisians, well, the majority of them survived. This allows the Space Wolves to convert themselves into a kind of almost new chapter. They get a born again.
Yes. And did he set that up? Yes, because I think he's still, as much as he does crazy shit, he's cunning.
He's still a Primarch. That's the thing. I mean, the only Primarch who I think of as not being cunning is the guy who has nails shoved into his skull.
Yes.
Which it probably makes it hard to think from time to time.
Like, I had a good plan. And then there was a nail in my head.
The Wheel of Fire campaign, though, does do a couple things for the Space Wolves. The first one, actually, three, is what we just discussed. It shifts the Legion. The next one is it actually does prove them out. This shows what the Space Wolves can do. The orcs had been a problem since the Great Crusade began. And the Space Wolves were the first ones to really show a significant victory against the orcs. But the third one, it's just kind of random. The Imperium builds the Fang for them, which is one of the more important parts.
That's awesome.
Of Space Wolf lore. So remember we mentioned before Asaheim, so the place, or Asheim, whatever it is, the place in the North Pole of Fenris, where there are monsters and deer.
I love the monsters. Oh, and deer.
There's also deer, lots of deer. Anyway, white tail? I don't know. So the Imperium, as almost a thank you to the Space Wolves, and probably more so because they realized you can't have a recruiting world and build it somewhere where like it burns down every 3-4 years. So they're like, we're just gonna build it in this spot. And they build this fortress in Asheim, which is insane.
You're way underselling it.
Well, let's talk about, when I say fortress, let me get to, okay.
They didn't put a deck on the house, man.
Yeah. So this thing is impossibly kilometers wide. It was built it was built similarly to the Imperial Palace on Terra, built in the Himalayan mountains. Yeah. That's what they went after.
It goes into outer space.
Its greatest feature is that the Fang it crests, it goes all the way up out of the atmosphere so ships can dock with it. Yeah.
How big's your building? Spaceships dock with my building.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's big. It doesn't play around and also becomes pretty centralized to everything that comes.
Everything comes now out of the Fang. So the Fang comes up a lot in the stories a lot. The Fang's amazing. There's really cool descriptions of it. There's some good artistic work around if you guys want to look it up. The Fang's amazing. But what the Fang does, they're the only ones who have this. Because the Space Wolves only recruit from one world, they've maximized this world. So the Fang allows for them to do all the recruitment. And once a Space Wolf is ready, they just hop in the elevator and go to the top floor and they're on a spaceship. Also allows them to deploy really quickly. Actually, you know what? Let's do it. Let's dive now a bit more into making of a Space Wolf.
Space Wolf recruitment is awesome. And it's also pretty hardcore and a couple because they have
it's the most hardcore. No, yeah. It's not pretty hardcore. It is the Space Wolves. When we talk about, lore and things making sense, not making sense, yes, the orbit of this planet makes no sense. But if you're saying the Space Wolf Space Marines are better in combat than the other Space Marines, it actually makes a lot of sense when you understand their recruitment process.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
Yeah, they're not exactly taking the weak part of the litter.
Yeah, as we've said before, every Space Marine, they have recruiting worlds. It can be one, it can be multiple, and they tend to kind of watch the local population. Like Imperial Fists, for example, I think they recruit out of Necromunda, and they mostly recruit from the gang sector. Who's really good at fighting and killing. That's adorable compared to what the Space Wolves are pulling from.
Yep.
The Space Wolves are pulling from a planet that is constantly at war with itself. They are pulling, they're not pulling a kid or a gang who are able to, be thieves and do some assassination. They're pulling children warriors. And again, they're all children. I keep saying this, children.
Hey, my scouts aren't at least now.
Yeah. The Space Wolves send something out called Wolf Priests. The Wolf Priests are their closest relation would be a chaplain. But it's not. They're beyond a chaplain. Because chaplains are, in the rest of the Space Marines, are meant to be the connection between the Space Marine chapter and the Emperor. Whereas the Wolf Priests are a connection between the Space Marines and
the
history of the Space Wolves. It's a little bit, also the Emperor, but it's a little bit different.
There's a big part about you're a Space Wolf first.
Exactly. So I just want to call out, when we say they're a chaplain, it's not like, oh, they call their chaplain Space Wolf, Wolf Priests. No, they're more than that. So one of the main jobs.
They're effectively chaplain/scalds.
Yeah, that's a good way
of it. They're supposed to have the traditions of, and they're pretty hardcore about it too.
Oh, yes.
This Wolf isn't priests, like, yeah. Hey, our traditions can be sometimes good, sometimes bad. They're like, no, these are the traditions.
These are our traditions. Period. Full stop. Exactly. So let's go into this process. Oh, I like this. So the Wolf Priests kind of wander around Fenris looking for recruits.
Possible, they think people that show great promise. Yeah.
Important piece here. Everyone who lives in Fenris is aware of the Space Wolves. They don't interact with them. They're actually more aware of them from like stories. And the stories are of, and it's written very well in the codexes, giant men clad in armor just descending into the villages to take the greatest warriors with them. And it's the greatest honor that could happen to you. So when a Fenrisian sees one of these wolf priests, it's a moment of pride because am I going to be given my chance? Am I being chosen? Am I being singled as one of the greatest warriors?
It's also your opportunity to prove your greatness. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. But they also don't, that's a key thing. When the wolf priests arrive, they don't just call out names and say, hey, get in the bus. He calls out names for challenges. You must, and it's the same challenges that Leman put to the emperor: eating, drinking, fighting. Sometimes it could be skill games of axe throwing. Well,
they ask some questions though. They have to have a basic knowledge of what it means to be a Fenrisian.
Yeah,
that is a big thing. In a lot of the stories, they just ask them those type of questions.
What I love about this though is that they're not just taking your prior accomplishments and saying, "Oh, good enough." They're using themselves because they're a known commodity, and using themselves as a judgment against them. You must fight me. You must do combat. You must race me. You must lift against me because I know how strong I am, and I know how strong. And therefore, I know how strong you have to be. If they achieve all this, then the warriors are taken back to the Fang. And again, just like any other space marine, first bit of getting to the Fang, again, push-up contest, running, the usual basics of combat, making sure that any aspirant does have, the
blah, the blah, blah, Gates of Morkai.
All right, let's have fun. The basement of the Fang.
Cool, cool, cool. Running, jumping, skipping. Gates of Morkai.
Gates of Morkai. I still know what the hell this thing is. So in the basement of the Fang, there's something called the Gates of Morkai, which is a portal to chaos, right?
Probably. It's a testing. It's supposed to test your soul.
And so what they do is every aspirant has to stand in the gates and be tested by chaos. They do this under the watchful eye of the rune priests, which are the librarians.
Totally not psychers.
Yeah. They are psychers, but they're good psychers.
No, they manipulate the elements. Thank you very much.
That's right. I forgot about that. They actually make the elements. So while they're there, the aspirant is going to be tempted by chaos. If they give any semblance of an inkling to be okay with that, they explode because behind them is said rune priest with a bolter.
Yep.
If they pass this test, they then move on to what's basically the crappier one, which is drinking from the cup of the wolfen, where they get the first of their two doses of their gene seed. Everyone else, by the way, the gene seed's in an organ and implanted. The space wolves just drink theirs, apparently.
It's awesome sauce.
It's so weird. So,
also, they have a name of their gene seed.
Because the Canis Helix. Yeah. Which does... All right, let me give you the background of this before we dive into what it does. So this whole method comes actually from... We talked earlier and I skipped over it a little bit. When Leman brought everyone, uplifted all of his generals together, the first thing he made them all do was drink from a cup, and it was the gene seed. And it is believed that if you drink the Canis Helix and you have any disloyalty in your heart, it will change you and will turn you into something. One of Lehman's actually closer advisors drank from it, and upon drinking, immediately attacked Leman. And Leman killed him. And it was shown because he was tempted by chaos. And by drinking the Canis Helix, it exposed that. So
your basest of instincts.
Yes. Yeah. So between the Gates of Morkai and Canis Helix, in theory, no space wolf should ever fall to chaos, which in the lore is true. Tabletop. Their ability to resist powers. So anyway, but the Canis Helix does a few things. Some of them are cool, like makes you stronger and your skin gets as tough as leather. Why that would matter, don't know, but it does. Others are super, super, super dumb.
Your enhanced sense of smell.
Okay.
Awesome. Probably has nothing to do with your power armor, but you also get elongated canine teeth, which just look cool in pictures.
Yeah. Apparently they can not pierce, but dent Plasteel.
Also, it makes it look cool because all of my space wolves don't wear helmets because you wouldn't be able to see their sick teeth, their cool tats, and their ponytails.
This is why all your space wolves get poisoned. This is literally why.
The power armor apparently wasn't stopping it in the first place.
I think you actually fail more saves because of that. It's just the dice know.
There's not one helmet in my entire space wolf army. Not one.
So, but again, they have long canines because they're biters, like the Wotutu warriors. I said Wotutu warrior, so it was only one guy who bit Ace Ventura. We learn later, though, that the Gene Seed does have an interesting problem. When Korax enters the Emperor's lab, and he basically goes through all the Primarch genes, because it's all cataloged there, he saw that some of them had other things in
bonus.
Yeah. For whatever reason, the Space Wolves had a wolf put in them, because somehow this will turn them into a werewolf.
Yeah. Wolfen.
It's known as the curse of the Wolfen.
Is it a curse or is it just awesome?
So after the first dose of the aspirin drinking this Canis Helix, they actually turn into a Wolfen, which if you know what a Wolfen looks like, Sabretooth from the X-Men comics. I know where GW stole it from. It looks identical, by the way. They get a big mane around them. They get claws. They get super jacked. The aspirin's then taken like thousands of kilometers into the wilds around the Fang, where there are ice worms, trolls, and deer.
Watch out for those deer.
Those deer, they can be mean. Yeah, they can be mean. The aspirin has to do one thing and one thing only. Get back to the Fang.
Say, don't die.
Yeah, get back to the Fang. But in order to get back to the Fang, they're going to have to fight off the deer. They're going to have to find food. So the deer works twice here. They can fight off the deer, then eat the deer. So there's a win.
Well, it's a big deal in this, though, because they also have to fight off their primal instincts.
Exactly. And that's the most
Which is the biggest part.
Yeah, so they have to show that they can control the Wolfen gene. And if they arrive back at the Fang, this is where it gets a little bit dumb.
Also, let's back that up. They're sent out with loincloth, figure it out.
But they have a mane of hair now.
I'm just saying. It's not like they gave them a pack.
I don't know. I saw, was it X-Men Origins? What was the one Sabretooth was in? I don't know. It was there. Like, okay, that's that one. So they're out there. The weird thing is when they get back to the Fang, if they get back to the Fang, then they're given a second dose of the Canis Helix, which then stabilizes the mutation and stops them being Wolfen anymore. And then they go through the normal bits of organ implantation. If you don't make it back, you just roam the wilds, having succumbed to mutation, except for the 13th Legion?
13th Legion.
The 13th Legion, which we'll cover more in the next cast. Now, this is for people who don't play Space Wolves. You may have heard a phrase one time that says, there are no wolves on Fenris. The phrase comes from this. So I would take a quick moment to discuss the phrase, there are no wolves on Fenris. The comment was actually made by Magnus when discussing Fenris, but it's been brought up even by the Emperor talking about it. And I don't really know when to talk about it, so we're just going to do it right now. Fenris, it turns out, is actually a complete nightmare zone, and the Emperor knows about it. It was originally settled by humans in the golden age of technology. And then for whatever happened, everything after that moment was horrid. Fenris is the reason Fenris is the way it is, with like the lava storms and all that, and all this garbage, is it was a terraforming gone wrong. That's the real
story. They basically had, whoopsie.
Yep.
Line 6 of code did not work out well.
Yeah. It completely failed. This isn't even the worst part, because the reason we talk about there are no wolves on Fenris is during, it's actually Lucas the Trickster's book. We'll cover him on the next cast. They realized that all the Fenrisian wolves have human DNA in them. Not because these are Wolfen who fell to the curse of the Wolfen. The wolves of Fenris are actually humans who were genetically modified or genetically tested. We don't know what happened, were then converted into wolves over time. Was this evil? I mean, yeah, it's definitely evil. But the question, what we don't know is if it was intentional.
It wasn't on purpose.
It wasn't on purpose. We don't know. But when you hear the phrase, there are no wolves on Fenris, That's what it means. I just wanted, for people who don't play Space Wolf, to know that. So let's just, a couple of quick notes on Space Wolf recruitment that we got out of the way because they're quick hitters. The Space Wolves, they use different terms for a lot of the what are the same units. So they don't call their new recruits neophytes or scouts. They're called Blood Claws. Their heavy weapons teams, those actually are a cool name. Those are called Long Fangs. That's because the stupid canine teeth we were just talking about that the Space Wolves have actually grow your entire life. So once you're old, you actually have longer fangs. You have to be old and experienced to be on their heavy weapon squad. This thing. Their jump pack assault marines are called Sky Claws. Their bikers are called Swift Claws. Their tactical marines are called Gray Hunters because their army is gray. I'm sorry, their armor is gray. Instead of Terminators, they're the Wolf Guard. Instead of captains, if it's Wolf Lords. Instead of chapter masters.
Well, the Wolf Guard doesn't just have Terminators. It's just people that have been elevated up.
Oh, I thought it was all Terminators. Mm-mm. Do Space Wolves have Terminators?
Space Wolves have Terminators, but they have Wolf Guard Terminators, but they've also got Wolf Guard, which are the guy that you can put jump packs on.
I can be completely wrong. So do they have just regular Terminators, or are they all Wolf
Guard Terminators? You have to be a Wolf Guard Terminator.
So you have to be Wolf Guard, but you can be a Wolf Guard who's not a Terminator.
Correct.
Okay. Good to know. You've also got some additional things like we said, the Wolf Priests, the Rune Priests, special dreadnoughts. They actually have Wolfen dreadnoughts, which are, I'm gonna be honest, those are kind of incredibly badass. And then the incredibly stupid cavalry. They actually made
Thunder Wolf cavalry is awesome. Just accept it.
Okay. In theory, if a giant space marine riding a giant wolf got into the enemy lines, bad news bears.
With a thunder hammer.
Yeah, carrying a thunder hammer, I am going to admit, absolute bad news bears. I'm just saying, hunter killer missiles exist. They're not particularly fast. It's still a wolf.
It does stuff.
Look, we have a good number of British listeners. They're all aware of the charge of the Light Brigade. I'm just saying, we've proven it out time and time again in history.
Did they have storm shields?
Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Storm shields. Okay.
Four up info, baby.
Yeah, on the guy holding the shield. What about the wolf?
You just kind of lean into it. Lean into it.
lean forward. We got this.
You're fine.
Aesthetically, they look amazing. I'll be honest. The Thunder Wolf Cavalry look so much better than the stupid Atlan Rough Riders. So much better.
They're also gigantic.
They look super cool, but it's that moment you take that step back and go, doesn't the Dark Angels have land speeders that are the exact same thing? Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't those fly?
Do they have guys with thunder hammers and shields riding giant wolves? No.
They have assault cannons.
Pshaw. Talk to the hand.
So let's talk about Russ and his legion then. As we said before, the Emperor takes Russ under his wing early and just showed a lot of favor towards Russ, honestly. Horus got the most, but Russ was not far behind. And deservingly so. I mean, Russ wasn't like a teacher's pet. He really did love the Emperor and showed massive fealty to him. So the Emperor rewarded it back.
Also, Lehman would throw down if you would say some shit about the Emperor.
That's true.
And also did not care who it was or where it was.
And the Emperor also liked that Lehman was an incredibly charismatic leader to his legion. All, as Brad said, every Primarch is psychically attached to his legion, but there was a different thing with Russ. The Space Wolves, I mean, candidly, none of them ever betrayed him. In every other story, I can think of at least seven Primarchs, not all of them were Chaos, where at one point someone in their legion questioned their authority or questioned them. There's no story I can think of that involves Russ.
They want him to be proud of them. They want stories to be sung about them.
But I think they also knew he loved them.
But he's also one of them. That's the whole thing. He's down doing, like, as crazy shit as the rest of the wolves are doing. You're like, hey, what's my Primarch doing? You're like, that dude just did three backflips into the middle of the line.
It's more, where is Lehman? He's up front.
Of course he's up front. What's he doing? I think he's actually hitting people with a mug of mead.
Yeah.
And his axe.
Yeah.
He, like, what is he drinking it? Sometimes. Also, is he singing songs about it? Yeah, he's currently constructing his own ballad about himself.
Yeah, if Lehman had a cell phone, he would have had a selfie stick.
Or he
would have had a GoPro strapped to him the whole time.
Yeah, the entire...
And then after the battle, he makes everyone watch it over and over again.
Are you currently narrating this battle while you fight it? And then I decapitate. What?
I firmly believe Lehman Russ would have loved GoPro camera. Then afterwards... After the battle, he just sequesters himself in his office to edit the video and then makes the entire Legion watch 7 hours of
which
of
it him also doing it. They would have been so down for
it. Oh, yeah. They would have, like, we're bringing mead. We're bringing meat.
This is the best.
This is the best day ever. So the part I do like about this, though, is that in the stories, it talks about the Emperor really teaching Russ tactics of battle and all this stuff. And I'm like, well, in this case, he wasn't the best teacher because Lehman's tactics changed 0% in this time. They may have actually gotten worse.
So there's some awesome boarding actions though.
Oh,
he didn't.
We'll get there. Yeah. So the Space Wolves, you know, as a six, just like when they were the Sixth Legion, were known for their ferocity in battle. With Russ, this just amped up. They weren't like bloodthirsty savages like world eaters and night lords, and they weren't cold-blooded killers like the Dark Angels. They were just this like spearhead that would launch itself in at things. But it doesn't mean that the problem is that they would do this against overwhelming odds, and to Brad's point, they'd come out with a W. And so it was like this just emboldened them to do it more and more. And my favorite example of this, we've talked about before, is that every other Legion, when doing space combat, fires boarding shuttles at the opposition.
And
the
boarding shuttles, which they wouldn't.
Yeah, and the boarding shuttles would pierce the armor and then open, and a bunch of troops would jump at it and engage in combat. At some point, who knows when, one Space Wolf did this and jumped out of a ship wearing Terminator armor with a chain fist and landed on the other ship, cut a hole in the ship with his chain fist, then fought his way in. The problem is that because he did that and every Space Wolf saw it and went, well, that's the most badass thing I've ever seen in my life. Now they can't use boarding. They can't use boarding ships.
They just shoot Terminators at spaceships.
This is the only way Space Wolves do this. They really are human orcs because it's just there's no reason to do this.
Absolutely not.
But I totally get why this from a Space Wolf standpoint. You're like, well, you know, Yorn and Eric and Sean all cut their way in, and then you're sitting there going, well, if we just hop in this shuttle, we'll actually get there faster and we'll be further into the ship. And they just look at you like, right, but that's just the lamest thing I've ever heard.
Also, no one's writing a story about that.
Yes. Then you now
like, I they're doing to do, the Achilles of yeah. That's why no one will remember your name.
Like literally the Space Wolves do everything the hard way.
The awesome way, I think you meant to say.
Yeah.
Again, they also break into bands in this. This is kind of weird because a lot of times they do boarding parties and stuff like that. You get who your leader is. You get a Ragnar, you get a Canis, you get a whoever. And those guys are looking for their own personal glory on it, which sometimes can run afoul. But
doesn't always end great. So,
but this, you get a guys that are just wildly loyal, unbelievably excited, boisterous, crazy.
But basically lucky in combat.
Oh, wildly. They must, every single person has a rabbit's foot.
So this actually creates a weird situation for Lehman with his brothers. Because everyone expected his prowess. Maybe not Lorgar, but who cares? But a lot of them had some pretty strong opinions on him. Mostly because his bravado really bothered a lot of the other Primarchs.
I don't know if the bravado bothered the other Primarchs as much as the fact that, as much as I love the Space Wolves, he ruins battle plans because he's always bananas reckless.
Well, it's the issue is that the Lehman also created a lot of just like conflict where there shouldn't be any because he was just so into the Emperor. You know, the Emperor like orders toast with raspberry jam and someone says, well, I actually like strawberry. Russ might kill that person.
Yeah. Like, how dare you?
And so it's great for the Emperor having this attack dog, but for the other Primarchs, it was kind of grating. And it just, it begins to kind of come to a head. because...
Well, it came to a head because you know who's not in battle for glory and is not reckless and is not boisterous and yelling all over the place at his legion? The lion.
Although I will say the lion and the leman really did like each other in a sense of because it, but it was a weird way. They liked each other a lot, but for completely opposite but related reasons. Leman liked the lion because, man, could the Dark Angels fight. Man, the Dark Angels would engage in combat and they would just emerge victorious. And Leman respected that to the end of the earth. And the lion himself could fight. The lion thought Leman was an idiot in the way he fought, but also respected the fact that he was incredibly loyal to the Emperor.
And he did put up W after W.
And would win unwinnable battles routinely.
Yep.
So they both liked each other, but they hated the other one's tactics.
I mean, also the lion kind of hates
Yeah, the lion kind of hates everybody.
Yeah, and I'm just saying, even in his recent book, his Legion of the Fallen goes, because the lion was talking about how he's so lonely, and like, I'd like one of my brothers to be here. And he's like, even the lion?
Yeah.
He's like, even the lion.
Even the lion.
even the wolf.
Even the wolf, yeah. That's, I mean, he's not wrong. It's like, oh, it'd be fun to have him around. I mean, he'd go hang with Gilliman. He doesn't want to. The interesting thing about the lion and the leman, though, is there's the planet Dulon was an interesting one here and how this all kind of came to a head and their two styles differentiated. So Dulan refused Imperial compliance.
Bad decision.
Yeah. The Space Wolves and the Dark Angels were sent there with their Primarchs to convince them otherwise. Once they get there, the Space Wolves get there first. And, you know, Leman walks up to the microphone and starts calling down to the planet, the planetary governor or whoever probably the planetary emperor at this point, and explaining to him, I'm here, like, it's time for you to be compliant. And this planetary emperor decides to just shit-talk Leman.
Yeah, hard. And Leman puts on his boots a mighty ass-kicking.
Well, not immediately. Leman takes a verbal beating from this guy. If you guys are old enough to know what snaps was, that. Like it was bad. He roasts Leman.
Which was not exactly the best thing to do. Because Leman decides that he's going to beat everyone.
Yeah. So Leman, at this point, steps away from the microphone. And the lion arrives around the same time. And the Leman explains what they're going to do. And what they're going to do is kill every single thing on this planet.
Yeah.
And make this emperor on the planet watch it. And then at the end,
he's going to kill him as the last guy. One.
And then Leman, to celebrate his plan, goes and gets super drunk and has a big festivity. The lion just goes, this is objectively stupid. Like, these guys have no defenses. What are we doing? And he just goes, ugh, I have stuff to do. And he just teleports down there. Luckily, Leman's aware the lion teleported down, so he cuts off the festivities and shoots down there pretty quickly, but not quick enough. Leman arrives just in time to see the lion chop the head off the emperor.
He's bent.
The lion is doing what the lion does best. He's saying, well, if this guy's not here, if this guy's dead, there'll be an Imperial compliance. I'm just going to kill this guy because I've got a lot of other places to get to and shit to do. And Leman is on the other side going, you just ruined what was going to be like my GoPro.
Awesome.
Yeah, I hit record and I'm here and now I'm recording.
Yeah.
I'm now, instead of recording me doing something awesome, I recorded you doing something awesome.
It wasn't even awesome, though, because his story was he was going to beat the shit out of everyone.
Yeah, it's right. The lion you're right. This is a Primarch decapitating a regular human being.
Yeah.
It's not this isn't much of a challenge.
So Leman does what you should do in that situation.
He gets super mad and punches him right in the face. And the two of them fight. For a day. And it's weird when they say this. I don't know what a fight means. Are they just punching each other? Are there
That's the thing is they weren't using, they clearly weren't using weapons, though.
But they were because of how it ends.
Well, at the end, they were using a weapon because, well.
This is my point. It's just, it's odd.
It's weird because I think this is, again, why I say that Leman kind of loves the lion, but the lion semi-hates the wolf. Because they get to the end of this day, and Russ just starts laughing.
And look, like, because Russ realizes. Well, it's fun. I like this story, this end of the story a lot because, yeah, Russ all of a sudden realizes this fight is stupid. Like, why am I fighting with him? This is hilarious. And they're just laughing at the stupidity of their fight. At which point the lion takes this as he's laughing at him for not being able to defeat him and takes his power fist and knocks Russ out for a day.
Well, that's what happens when you're just sitting with no helmet.
Which, by the way, makes Russ 0-2 in power fists to the face.
It also makes him 2-0 in shaking off power fists to the face.
That's true. That's a fair point.
Not a lot of people go, hey, man, what'd you get hit with? A power fist right to my dome. What happened? Nothing.
Yeah, and they make up later. But what I do love is that a key story that comes out of this is every single year,
For 10,000 years,
the Space Wolves pick a champion and the Dark Angels pick a champion and they fight each other on the anniversary of this fight.
And it's never missed once.
Yeah, they've done it every year. There have been a few times where this one fight has spilled over into a larger conflict. But that being said, these two had nothing but respect for each other. And we'll cover later to the point where Russ actually gets saved by the lion later on when he's about to get killed by Alpha Legion. It's the lion who saves him.
Lion's no joke.
Yeah. Oh, the lion's definitely no joke. I mean, people have viewpoints on him, I think, but, and God, that first novel was so boring. Sorry.
Forest book's cool.
Yeah.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
So let's dive now into more Leman, where some of his challenges are to come from. The Emperor was never really much of a guiding light, as much like a dictator when he talked to his kids. And Leman's one of the worst examples of this. The Emperor knew Leman would do anything he was told with vigor. And so he used Leman as an enforcer. And this was, in a lot of ways, not good for Leman. Because he was a cudgel for anything.
He didn't ask questions. This is a big thing on this. Yeah. Leman is so wildly loyal that the Emperor told me to do this. Don't care.
Yeah, I'm doing this. And a lot of times what he would do it with what became tantamount to bloodlust. And a lot of times it was fine.
I'll give you that a little bit. I want to give it. I think it's more too much pride. He definitely had that sin. The bloodlust is.
I call it the violence that they would go into with the level of collateral damage and those things.
I'll give you that. That's what I'm saying. I think it's both, though, because I think he goes into it with, and because of him, you know, the Legion grows off of what the Primarch does. He's so prideful of the fact that he is the one chosen to do these public, I am the Emperor's assassin, you know?
Yeah, my issue is that he didn't know how to rein it in.
And he is there for some pretty genocide.
And let's go through, because I mean, there's times when this is good and there's times this is bad. Like the goods are like the final Ragdan Xenocide. That was Leman. That was because you had to eliminate them. There was actually, after, there was an enslaver outbreak. That Space Wolves
smoke checks them too.
There was this abhuman world of Cartonus. The same thing. These were problem worlds that were effectively exterminatus scenarios. Leman the Space Wolves
punched them to death. That was my first literal of the thing.
But the flip side though is that when tact was required, he didn't know how to. And one of the early ones, and probably from a lore history standpoint, one of the more important ones was Angron. Angron was implanting his legion with the butcher's nails, and then they'd get all hopped up with these butcher's nails and slaughter entire local populations. Weird that they turned to corn. The Emperor tells Leman to bring Angron back to Terra. This is over. No more butcher's nails. We're not doing this anymore.
Leman shows up with full-on diplomatic pants.
Yeah.
I mean, he came down and he politely explained the situation to Angron.
Well, let me set the stage better. Oh my God. So Angron has just finished just slaughtering a population. And Leman says, we're having a chat. So Angron is standing there with his entire legion who are in this literally
bathed in blood.
Yeah. Dripping blood. Their chain swords are still smoking, you know, and Leman is looking at him. And instead of like trying to talk this situation down, just immediately talks it up and tells him, you're coming with me. We're going back to Terra, whether you want to or not.
This is, again, a bad... I joked about when I set it up, when he came down with his diplomat pants, of course. But, like, you have to give it to Levin because he goes so all in. He's, like, looks like 2-6 off suit. All in.
Yeah.
Come with me or I'll kill your whole legion. By the way, he's standing in front of his legion.
So no one knows who fired the first shot, but we actually don't know what happens next. We just know that there was a conflict. Angron never went back to Terra, but both legions had to take a little pause while they refilled their recruit pools. It's been purged from Imperial records. We don't know exactly how bad the battle was, but we do know it was quite the battle. And yeah, both legions had to replenish afterwards.
Shit went down is all I'm saying.
Why would you send Lehman to do this? The next one kind of dives into this is called the Raising of Thulalia, whatever. So an Imperial fleet encounter is what turns out to be Eldar. And the hostilities, of course, happen instantly. They call for support. And the Imperial fleet, when they call in, the Space Wolves come in. This isn't Lehman. This is just Space Wolves. The battle begins, and the Space Wolves gain the upper hand. And it's obvious they're going to win. So the Xenos begin to plead for terms. Say, let us surrender, you know, whatever, yada, yada. And the Imperial officers, say yes. And the Space Wolves tell them, shut up, and proceed to...
Thunderdome the world.
Yeah, to the point where there is nothing left. The Admech couldn't even plunder the Xenos because there was nothing left.
They did the whole, do not resist, we are saving you.
Yeah. But what's crazy about it is in the events afterwards, all the Imperial officers present vowed to never call for support from the Space Wolves ever again because they were actually bothered by the violence that the Space Wolves were enacting.
Well, they're also just using tactics that would just obliterate everybody around them. If you weren't a Marine, you were just getting killed by the shit they were doing.
I think obviously this all culminates with the destruction of the Thousand Suns. And I'm going to just a quick reminder, I'm not going to dive back into that full story, but just as a reminder, the Emperor told Lehman to get Magnus and bring him to Terra. That's what he was told to do. Horus, again, Lehman didn't know Horus had turned to chaos. Horus convinces Lehman that what the Emperor really wanted him to do was destroy the Legion. And
the whole Legion.
The whole Legion. And Lehman makes this call that, well, the Magnus did offend the Emperor, so what else would a loyal servant of the Emperor do?
Yeah, he was quickly convinced of that.
I mean, that's
the thing. But I also think he wanted to think that.
He does, but it's something I think is important is that when Lehman killed Magnus, because he did kill him, when he killed Magnus, Magnus was not with Chaos. Magnus had not turned.
Not until he got his back broken.
Yeah. But that's where this whole thing's a little bit messed up. Is that when Lehman went and stabbed Horus, it's like, yeah, fair enough, man. You know what I mean? Like that, but against Magnus he'd done something wrong, don't get me wrong, but not to Lehman.
There's a reason it's the sacking of Prospero.
Yeah. That wasn't much of a battle. Now, this all becomes kind of a cool, I don't know. It's the plot of Wicked. I'll admit it right now. Lehman changes. So after the siege of Prospero, the Space Wolf fleet is in orbit, recovering from the battle. And they incurred a lot of losses,
They did take on the entire Thousand Suns.
Yeah, the entire planet, too. While they were in orbit, this massive Alpha Legion just shows up, that's weird. Why are you guys here? And then they attacked. And the Space Wolves were not prepared for this. They're fighting, but they're already a damaged Legion from their battle. And they're like 2-1, 3-1 outnumbered by Alpha Legion.
Because also... And the Alpha Legions are pretty adept at choosing fights that they're going to win.
And so Lehman realizes that this is it. He's probably, he and his Legion are about to die. And so he does what all Primarchs do. He goes and has a pity party. Sorry, guys, he does. So, and this is also, again, it's the plot of Wicked. He then starts thinking back on his old thing, Which, on a note of Wicked, I haven't seen it. I actually don't know the plot of Wicked. I know the plot of Robot Chicken, their third Star Wars episode.
The Emperor's falling down the...
Yeah, which is one of the... And if that's what Wicked is, awesome. I realize I'm quoting Wicked. I've never seen it, but that's awesome. And they reference it being it. So while sulking, Bjorn, next episode, walks in. And they talk for a little bit. And Leman talks about just feeling bad about destroying all life on Prospero and killing his brother. All the people that he's put to the blade for the Emperor. And he starts this realization that his legion were just, they weren't warriors, they were butchers.
Well, this is a big thing for him because he thought that he was basically dishonoring in the entirety of his, the people that counted on him the most, the people that counted on him for guidance, for leadership, for an example. And he felt that he was leading them. Am I leading them astray? Am I basically dishonoring everyone?
But the whole thing, we are, the Space Wolves are warriors. That's what we are. We are warriors. And no, we were butchers, is that moment. So from this moment on, this kind of fills him with rage as he realizes this. And he decides, no, he is going to, his legion is not going to be a puppet. It's going to be independent. It's going to be its own thing. And he then takes the fight to the Alpha Legion, which, by the way, we're still about to just beat the ever-living piss out of them because they're grossly outnumbered. But luckily, the Lion shows up and the Dark Angels.
It's also a space fight.
It's a space fight, yeah. But the Alpha Legion, we're going to wreck him. Luckily, the Dark Angels show up and the Alpha Legion quickly retreat after realizing we're about to get wrecked.
They got left. Yeah. Which is kind of funny because as much as the Lion's like in the middle pack for me of people I like, when the Dark Angels show up, people tend to just go, yeah, I was just joking, and they leave.
Yes. I didn't want to fight this fight. This one's going to hurt. So after the battle, though, Russ does. He changes himself, but also his legion. They're not going to blindly follow. They're going to lead. And they're going to focus on the things that make them great. Glorious combat, heroism, destruction of their enemies. But, you know, but the big focus is their enemies, not the enemies of others.
Well, I think this is a big deal, and I love how you put it, and the D&D people will get it. He went from chaotic neutral to chaotic good. And I think it's a big deal on this because—
Other way around.
What's that?
What I'm saying he did is they were trying to be lawful good forever.
Yeah.
And they didn't have the ability. And they finally moved over.
Because they're agents of chaos in the first place. The way that they feel. Exactly. They're about freedom and
But they didn't want to feel this. That was their problem, is that when they were completely under the throes of the Emperor, they were trying to be, you know.
But they were. They were restrained free spirits, man.
Yeah. But their instinct is chaos.
And the biggest thing is, and this is one of the things about it, is he wants to fight. And this is one of the big reasons that they have these epic sagas, because you're effectively, they're writing down everything that happened. Obviously, it's the dramatized version, but it makes you be better because, hey, we're recording your epic deeds. If we don't record your deeds, it's because you're not worthy of these deeds. But we will have that. You know, the GoPro's on because we want to celebrate the greatness of what you did in your life. And it shouldn't be, there should be nothing that you should do that you aren't willing to have this saga written about. Yeah.
But what I like it with this shift over to this, and I think, I mean, it's like, it's chaotic neutral, chaotic good is where they end up.
I think they're chaotic good.
Yeah, they move into.
There's still collateral damage, but.
Yeah, but that's what the chaotic is. But that's where, and what makes this different is, for example, like Leman's not turning his back on the Emperor, but he's working for the Emperor in the ways that make sense for him. So when Horus, you know, when Leman went to Horus's flagship to stab Horus with the spear, it wasn't because the Emperor told him to, because in fact he didn't. This was Horus's idea. Or sorry, this was Leman's idea.
Oh, he's wildly feels betrayed. But also, I think he feels a lot of shame at this point in time because he was so easily manipulated by his brother.
Yeah, but what I'm using as these are examples I like to use where Leman begins doing things that are still on the best interests of the Imperium, but they're more so in his interests. He's not just waging a war because someone told him to go
do something.
They're
also pretty heroic, wild.
Well, yeah, that story is extra badass. But this also spreads to his legion. And it's not just that he then makes this shift, but the whole legion does. And the legion's focus becomes one of, it depends on the question, are you a hero? And if the answer is no, then go fix it. Yep. That becomes it. And you don't get to be a hero.
That's what I was saying on the thing, because of the sagas. I think the sagas make them have to be, you know, heroes on that, as far as, are you proud of what you did?
Yeah.
Like, everything that you do has to be out in the light.
And I think the best way for me to kind of describe the Space Wolves' viewpoint of themselves is they're not trying to be, you know, another legion in the armies of the Imperium. They're trying to be the legion in the Imperium.
Oh, 100%.
What they want is that when the citizenry of the Imperium sees gray and yellow, they rejoice because the heroes of the Imperium are here. That becomes the focus of them. And we see that flesh out, and it'll be in our next cast.
And the claws and the blood claws and people, they're trying to make their sagas, but they're trying to make their sagas in the light of, again, being heroic, being the achievements that we've accomplished, not that we just killed people.
Yeah, exactly. It's that we saved people
people. How did we win?
Yeah.
Was it, you know, a great battle? Was it victory? Why did we do the things we did?
Mm-hmm.
Again, the sagas.
And I think when we're going to break here and go, before we go into our next cast for next week. But I believe this is where you start to see this really fleshes itself out in the heroes of them. Bjorn, Ragnar, Santa, whatever his name is.
Logan Grimnar, Canis, Harold. There's just a long line, Lucas the Trickster, of all these heroic, great Space Wolf characters. Mm-hmm. And I love the sagas because, again, they have this whole, you won. How? How did you go about it? How did this win come about?
And, but what I see them as, and we'll get into next week, is where these guys, their focus is it's on protecting the people of the Imperium. More so than, you know, some of the other legions where it's
they've gotten past just the win to win.
Yeah.
The Space Wolves were chalk up the W, period.
Now they are. It's still chalk up the W, but it's going to be in the battles we want to fight against the enemies we're interested in.
Well, they're still prideful, very prideful.
Yeah.
But they want to fight the battles that they think are worth fighting.
Yep. Also, we promised everyone we'd talk about how Brad broke the Space Wolves.
And it's not my fault.
This is totally,
I mean, it's 100% my fault, but it wasn't my fault, kind of.
It was entirely your fault. This is, okay, let me explain what happened. So for those who don't know, GW changes the rules of the game, not significantly, but they change values and some small rules time to time within the game. So as you play the game multiple times a year, the game will shift a little bit. It's to create balance. It's a really nice idea. And what they do a lot of times is they'll take a group, a faction that's not performing very well, and they'll change their rules and their points, so they perform better. Sometimes they do it really well. Sometimes there's an oversight.
So I may or may not have found a loophole in the Space Wolves. They gave away free Worgen. Worgen used to cost a lot of points. We play a 2,000-point game, and everything costs X amount of points. And they said Worgen was free for Marines. And I found the Marines that could take the most Worgen. And I put every piece of war gear possible. Yeah.
So most armies can bring what are called Devastator Marines, and they have a limit on what they can carry. Space Wolves have long fangs.
Well, they have the Wolf Guard is where I really broke it.
Yeah, well, I'm going with the last cannons first, we'll go into your Thunder Hammer of just.
Well, it's stupidity. Thunder. It's Thunder Hammer Combine Melta on every single guy.
Yeah. So you, how many Thunder Hammers were there?
30 something, and then I had 27 Meltas, and then the 15, that was more than that, last cannons.
And then suppressors.
Oh, God. Screw you, Sam. But the best part, we figured it out, is the army would have cost 800 points and now cost me 1995 exactly.
Yeah. And what happened was, Brad, not only did he discover this and take great joy in it and win events easily with it, he also shared the list with people. And this list became a terror globally within a couple of weeks, winning numerous events being a almost impossible to defeat because the damage output was insane.
And it got smoke checked so fast.
GW responded by changing the points and rules on Space Wolves so much that they basically didn't exist for months afterwards.
Yeah. It was a good time, though.
That was fun times. So, yeah, that was Brad breaking the Space Wolves. So next week, we're going to dive more into the characters of the Space Wolves. It's actually the best way to tell their lore. So until then, this has been John Barsotti and Brad Chester.
This guy.
See you next week.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.